WMFO, Medford. Unlike milk, spent matchsticks, and library books, there is no due date, stench, or expiration in the grand hour. Good morning. It's the 19th of February, 2020. I'm coming to you today with a double billing of Westerns. It's been a while. It's been too long. First up, we have episode 20, Frontier Gentleman, and starring John Daner, who seemed to be in just about every Western conceived in the mid to late 50s, that is. This one's titled The Well, and it had an original air date of the 15th of June, 1958. My name is Arthur, and you're listening to the Grand Hour here this morning. Thanks for tuning in.
In the plains country of Wyoming Territory, I met a homesteading family. This is an account of how they lived and nearly died. Frontier Gentlemen. Herewith, an Englishman's account of life and death in the West. As a reporter for the London Times, he writes his colorful and unusual stories. But as a man with a gun, he lives and becomes a part of the violent years in the new territories. Now starring John Daner, this is the story of J.B. Kendall, Frontier Gentleman. I came across the shack in the mid-afternoon. It seemed to spring out of a slight depression in the unchanging flatness of plains, this isolated cabin with its miniature corral. And startling against the sun-browned earth, the tiny patch of green lawn. As I drew closer, I saw a child, perhaps 3 years old. She hugged a shapeless lump of calico in her arms and stood quiet in the doorway, watching gravely as I approached. I called hello to her. Her eyes remained on me, wide, gray-blue. The only reaction to my voice, a tightening of her hands about the faceless doll. I saw the window, a flap of canvas serving for glass, rough-hewn logs, ill-fitting, the chinks filled with baked earth. At the side of the cabin, a few yards away, was a well with its rope and an iron bucket. I looked back to the child, but she was no longer there. Instead, a tall, flaxen-haired woman stood in the doorway, a Winchester held in her hands.
Jingle your spurs, mister. Go on.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to frighten you. I wondered if I could have some water. For the horses, well, I'd be willing to pay.
You alone?
Yes.
We're not used to strangers riding this way. Where are you headed?
Laramie.
Well, that's a long ride.
I know.
Your horse looks tired. It's better watering.
Oh, thank you.
I got nothing for the horse to drink out of. You'll have to use your hat.
All right.
Ooh. Here. Maybe you can use this. Not much, but it's the biggest pan I've got.
No, really, it is. The horse doesn't mind my hat. He's used to it.
Never mind. Poor.
Oh, thank you. Oh,
It's been a hot day.
It's about the same as usual. I'm sorry about the rifle, mister.
Sure, it's all right.
No, I'm sorry. My husband's away. He won't be back till late. It's just the baby and me.
I understand.
I guess it's easy to forget hospitality out here. I'm sorry that water's some brackish. Wally's digging a new well around the back, but it hasn't hit sweet water yet.
I'm very grateful. Would you take this, please?
Oh, no. We don't take money for water.
Yeah, I wondered about your grass over there.
It's pretty, isn't it? My sister sent the seeds from home, from the east, Connecticut.
Oh?
That's where I'm from, before Wally and I got married and came out here. Do you know Connecticut, mister?
Yes, I've been there.
You have? Where, Richfield? Do you know Richfield?
No. New Haven, though. I've been there.
Oh, that's fine. Just fine. Oh, imagine. New Haven. You must be one of those Yale college men.
No.
The way you talk.
No, I'm English.
I could have sworn it was New England. Boston, maybe.
How long have you been out here?
A year now. We lived in St. Louis before that. The baby was born there and... Listen to me chattering on. I guess it's just that we don't get much chance to talk to folks from the East.
I can understand.
Can you? Can you? Well, I declare, we haven't even been introduced. I'm Meg Calder.
J.B. Kendall.
Mr. Kendall, why don't you come on in and have some apple cornbread? I just made some this morning.
Oh, well, it's kind of you.
Pure selfish, that's what it is. I want to hear about New Haven and the lot. You best put your horse in the corral. I'll make some coffee. It isn't like using fresh apples, real apples. But I guess we're lucky to even get dried ones out here.
Really? Good, Mrs. Collin.
Will you have some more coffee?
Please.
Annie's taken quite a fancy to you. She usually hides when strangers are about.
And she takes after you. Her eyes, hair.
You think so?
Annie.
Anne Meredith, after my great aunt. Anne Meredith Honeycutt in Ridgefield.
Ah.
She's a little shy, Mr. Kendall. You see, she can't talk.
Oh, well, she'll be...
I mean, she never will. She was born with an affliction. But she can hear, and she understands some. She knows her name, and Mama, and Dada. Don't you, baby? Come on, sit on Mama's lap.
What brought you out here, Mrs. Calder?
The land. We're homesteading. Wally knows a lot about farming. He figures when we get enough water, we'll raise wheat and grain. Barley, maybe. Says we've got to raise it to feed cattle. There'll be money in that.
It must be hard work digging wells.
Oh, it is. That one that's drying up, it's only 40 feet. The other one behind's down 50. Well, he thinks maybe another 20 feet will get him water. He's gone to the Allen boys to borrow another spade.
You mean he's digging it alone?
Oh, yes. When we first set up here, a fella came riding by and he said he could locate water for us. And he surely did. Just used a forked stick and he pointed right to the spot. He was a preacher kind of man. Helped Wally dig and Wally paid him $5.
Must get rather lonely for you. I mean, when your husband goes away.
Mr. Kendall, I haven't seen a white woman for a year. I don't think there's one for 100 miles around. Mrs. Manning used to live north, 30 miles from here, but she and her family... Oh, but Ed Manning, they got killed by Indians just before we came here. Don't do that, baby. Of course, we haven't had any trouble with Indians, but I do say I sometimes worry being alone with the baby.
I should imagine.
I hope you don't mind.
Mind?
Me, talking on like a jaybird.
Oh, I don't mind at all, no.
Annie, where are you going? Annie? Oh, that child, I declare. It's Wally! Wally!
Meg? Who's inside?
Stranger came by, named Kendall, on his way to land. Didn't you get the trouble?
No, no, it's trouble. Alan's place was burned down last night.
Oh, Wally.
You better get Annie in. I don't want her outside.
Come on, Annie. Come on, baby.
Come on.
Kendall?
Yes, you're Calder.
Well, pleased to know you, but you better be moving on. There's likely to be trouble.
What is it? What happened?
A fella called Selfridge. Him and a bunch of cattlemen. They figured to run all the homesteaders out.
But why?
Well, they say we've been killing their range cattle.
That's not true.
I know it isn't. That's what Alan told them. They gave him and his brother a beating, then fired the place. Alan says they'll be heading this way.
Oh, Wally.
Mister, you better hit the trail.
Oh, if I can be of any help, I...
Well, there's not much we can do. There's a bunch of...
No, I mean, if they come here, what's going to happen?
I don't know. I guess I'll send the wife and kid over to old man Hovland's place, and I'll wait here.
I'm not going. We've got a right to our land. It's all legal. You've got the papers, Wally. You can show them.
Meg, papers don't matter. They want to get us out of the territory. This thing's been coming for a long time. Alan told me, all over the country, cattlemen trying to chase homesteaders out.
They won't chase us.
You've got to go up to Hovland's and take the kid, Meg. There might be shooting.
You listen to me, Wally Calder. It took a year of wanting and all this spring for me to get that grass patch out front. I'm not giving it up. I'm here. Here I'm going to stay, and no cattleman nor anything else is putting me out.
Can't you get protection from the law?
Mister, the law is 130 miles from here, and they're not partial to homesteaders either.
Well, in that case, it might be just as well if I stay here, just in case you need another gun.
I'm obliged to you, Kendall, but if this Selfridge and his pals are looking for someone, it isn't going to be any healthier for you than for us.
I'll take the chance with you, at least overnight.
Hmm? Not much of a place to bed down. Meg can fix you up with a blanket.
Well, sure I can. I've got a quilt, too. Not that you'll be needing it in this weather, Mr. Kendall.
I'd best see to feeding the horse. Meg, you break out that hunting piece. There's shelves back of the bureau, top drawer.
All right, Wally.
I'll give you a hand, Mr. Calder.
Name's Wally. And I'd be much obliged. I haven't said anything to Meg, but I've been expecting something like this. Started up last winter, I guess.
What happened?
Oh, a lot of cattle died. It was a hard season. Well, you know how it is.
Yeah.
I came across a couple of poor critters myself, froze stiff, so I skinned them, took the hides. Wouldn't do the cattle any good. I sure needed them. So the cattlemen are saying fellas like me killed their beef, but they didn't die a natural death. Oh, watch out for the post.
All right, darling.
Looks loose. Gotta fix that one of these days.
I think you're going to have visitors, Wally.
Must be them. Selfridge and his boys. How many can you see?
Three. No. Four.
Yeah, four. Come on, we better get back to the cabin before they get here.
In a moment, we return to Frontier Gentlemen. Here's a recipe to suit most anyone's taste. Tape a heaping portion of mystery, a full measure of suspense, fold in scientific detection and pulsating action, and heat to a burning climax. That's what we'll be serving up on CBS Radio's FBI in Peace and War every Sunday on most of these stations. And now we return you to the Anthony Ellis production of Frontier Gentlemen.
Meg Calder was waiting for us in the doorway when we reached the cabin. I noticed an ancient hunting rifle, as well as the Winchester, leaning against the wall. Child Anne was huddled in a corner, still clasping the calico doll in her arms. We watched the riders as they approached across the plain, and their gallop slowed to a canter, a walk. And then they stopped a few feet from the little grass patch. One of the horses began to nibble at the green shoots.
Mister, get that horse of yours off my grass.
Now, Calder, I ain't gonna make a lot of talk. You got a kid inside. You got 1 hour to get her and your missus packed and out of here.
You got it all wrong. We're staying. You get off my land.
Homesteaders ain't wanted around here.
Alan's already told me about that. You think you're gonna burn down my place? You got another thing coming.
Now, me and the boys, we don't want no shooting.
You don't get that horse of yours off my grass. There's going to be shooting right now.
Meg, Meg, come back.
Back him up now. Go on. I'm not telling you again.
Put up your gun, man. We ain't got no quarrel with women.
No quarrel? What do you call it, then? Just trying to throw us off of what's rightly ours.
Oh, man, she sure is a live dictionary, ain't she? Oh, come on, Jack. They ain't going peaceable. Let's get started.
I wouldn't.
Who are you?
A friend of the Calders.
Another sidebuster, huh? Well, you better make a nine in your tail part. We don't want your kind around here.
Now, I ain't got no personal quarrel with you, Calder, but this here country is for cattle. Fellas like you ain't gonna come in here killing our stock.
I never did.
Oh, come on, Selfridge. I won't stop around here all day wrangling with this home sucker. Let's start burning.
You take it easy, Flag. We're gonna give him an hour, like I said.
Oh. I have an idea it's going to be the longest hour you ever waited, my friend.
I ain't your friend, mister. I don't want no mavericker like you for a friend. 1 hour, Calder. Then we're coming back.
Here.
They don't seem to think you mean what you say.
That's the trouble. Nobody puts up a fight against them. Well, they'll learn something from me. My great-grandfather, Silas Honeycutt, stood off a whole regiment of redcoats with Putnam. No offense to you, Mr. Kendall. You being English and all.
No offense.
What do you think, Kendall? What are our chances?
Wally Calder, you're not going
to... Now, wait a minute, Meg. We've got to think about the kid. Not going to be much use if she's got no Ma and Pa to care for her. Those fellas mean business. We put up a fight, they'll be killing, maybe on our side. I'm not afraid. But there are other places to start up again.
Wally, if you want to go, you go. I'm not stopping you. Me and Annie staying. You do what you want.
She's some woman, you know, Kendall?
I know.
I asked, what do you think?
Well, I can't answer, Wally. It's up to you.
Yeah. She sure takes good care of that grass, doesn't she? You know, we figure on planting vegetables
Annie!
As soon as we get the new well dug.
Annie! Wally! Did you see the baby come out?
Well, no, she was inside.
Well, she's gone. I can't find her.
Annie? Honey? Annie?
Isn't here, Wally.
Did you look behind the stove? She likes to hide behind.
I looked.
Well, perhaps she went out while we were all outside.
Maybe she got frightened. Annie! Annie, baby!
Kendall, you go around the other side, will you? Look in the corral. She
Annie!
Likes the horse. Maybe she's there.
Annie! Annie!
For the next 15 minutes, we searched. I could see Selfridge and his men about a quarter of a mile away, watching us. I found no trace of the child. When I returned, I saw the Calder standing beside the mouth of the new well behind the cabin. I joined them and felt a cold chill as I looked down into the darkness at my feet.
She couldn't have, honey.
Well, maybe she did. Maybe she's down there.
No, she knows about it. We showed her. We told her to stay away.
Maybe she didn't understand. Maybe she was running, scared, and fell, and she's down there. And we can't hear her because she can't cry or shout or anything. And she's lying there, hurt or dead.
No, Meg... No, she's just hiding somewhere. We'll find her.
Annie!
Go.
Annie!
Now, go.
It's your fault. It's you making us come out here in this terrible place with dirt, not enough food.
Honey, we'll find her. She'll be all right. Now, take hold of yourself. Meg, they're back. It's so...
I don't care. I want my baby. Wally, you've got to find her.
Yeah. They noticed you're ready to leave.
The child is lost. Did you see her come out of the cabin?
No. No, I didn't.
Quint, you see her?
Nope.
Well, I guess maybe I did while we was talking.
Where'd she go?
Around here at the back.
Wally!
You think she fell in the well?
Well, we don't know.
How deep is it?
About 50 feet.
Not that deep. You called to her down there?
Well, it wouldn't do any good. She can hear, but she can't talk.
That's a longish fall. I wouldn't figure out it'd be alive.
Shut your fool mouth.
Well, that's
well,
true.
You, Calder, you sure she's down there?
No, but she isn't any place else.
Now, what's it like down there? Rock?
No. Mostly soft
dirt.
You
know, she could be all right, little kid like that. They can take a fall pretty good, you know.
Now, that ain't much support, that soft dirt. Like's not you'd get a cave in.
I was aiming to fix that, but... Well, maybe she's not even in there.
Get a rope, Wally. Somebody's got to go down to find out.
Not me, no, sir. I heard about black damp in them wells.
Oh,
no, sir.
Black, nobody's
my...
you.
Hush up now.
Well, I ain't going down there. I
haven't got a proper windlass. Just been tying the other end of the post there.
Good.
She holds good. Hey, you fellas pay it out.
Sure.
I'm going down.
Right.
Wally.
Hard blossom.
You be careful.
Get behind me. Flag, get behind him. Flag.
Hold tightly now.
Okay, I got you.
Yeah.
Slow. You got the plank?
Yeah. Go ahead.
Easy now,
darling.
Easy.
Slowly. There's a lot of loose dirt falling.
Can't clear the air.
Slow down. Wally, shout out when you're on the bottom.
Annie.
All right.
Watch out. You've got a hand caught in that head.
Stay all right now.
Yes, go ahead.
Are you gone?
He's down.
All right. Kendall? Here.
Wally? Is she all right? Wally?
I don't know.
Bring her up, Wally. Tie the rope under your arms. Hold her. We'll pull you up.
Yeah. All right.
Some slack. Wait. Let us know when you're ready.
Lord, please. Please. Oh, Lord, deliver us. I pray.
Oh, now, Mrs. Now, she's going to be all right. Now, you see, she's going to be just fine.
You're taking a sweet time.
You ready? Wally, are you ready?
What's the matter with him?
Calder, you want us to pull up?
Gone slack again.
It's a black dance guy, and that's what did you keel over.
Wally, can you hear me? I'm going down after them. Be ready to pull up fast when I give the word. I went down into the well as quickly as I dared, my feet unavoidably scuffing the walls of the shaft, sending showers of dirt to the bottom. As the circle of light diminished over my head, I became aware of a stale heaviness in the air, which became more pronounced with every foot of the descent. Then I was at the bottom, and I could dimly make out the form of the child, and huddled beside her, Wally. As I made a hurried loop of the rope under my arms, I began to feel lightheaded. It was an effort to pick up the child, to hold her.
Pick me up! Up!
Then, as the ascent began, and the air became fresher, I felt my senses returning, and with them the realization that the little girl's heart was still beating.
Is she all right?
Annie!
She's alive. She's alive. Take her.
All right. Now, you come on out. I'll go down for coal.
No, no time. Send me down. Hurry. You'll have to bring us up together. I knew now what was meant by black damp. Some form of gas which gathered in the bottom of the well. This time, I breathed as sparingly as possible. At the bottom, I put Wally Calder over my shoulder and then began the never-ending journey to the surface. The light above me became dimmer and dimmer. I felt Wally falling, slipping off my shoulder, my grip on the rope weakening, weakening.
Mr. Kendall? Oh, there. That's better.
Oh, how did I...
They pulled it out, Kendall.
Huh? I don't remember.
He said you had a grip on me like to twist my neck off.
Oh, I'd like to thank them.
I already did. They didn't feel like waiting.
Oh?
No, they just kind of stood around a couple of minutes, then figured they'd better get back to the ranch before night.
How's the little girl?
Some bruises, but that's all.
Oh.
She's asleep now.
Meg and me, we just wish there was something we could do. If you want, you can share our place with us till you find a likely site for yourself. I'll help you build, Kendall. I'll give you a year's work for what you've done for us.
Oh, so thank you. But I suppose I'm what you'd call a wandering man. I'll stay the night if I may. Then in the morning, I'll go on to Laramie.
And after Laramie?
I don't know, Mrs. Calder. I don't really know.
Frontier Gentlemen was written, produced, and directed by Anthony Ellis and stars John Daner as J.B. Kendall. Featured in the cast were Virginia Gregg, Vic Perrin, Larry Dobkin, Jack Crucian, and Harry Bartell. Dan Cubberley speaking.
Thank you, lads. That was episode 20, Frontier Gentlemen, The Well. John Daner could have worked on his British accent a little bit more, because he surely doesn't sound like he's from England in that. And of course, the homesteader there figured him to be from New England, which I don't know what's a bigger insult for an Englishman, especially mentioned in Boston. That aired the 15th of June, 1958. And all the same, all the regulars are in there, except for maybe Parley Bear. Well, let me fulfill an FCC obligation here for a moment.
This is a firearm safety PSA. No matter how you feel about current gun laws, everybody should know the most critical rules about handling any firearm. Rule 0, all guns are always loaded. Rule 1, never point a gun at anything you are not willing to destroy. Rule 2, keep your finger off the trigger until your sights are on target and you have made the decision to shoot. Rule 3, be sure of your target and what is beyond it. A public safety message from WMFO in Medford, Tufts Educational Radio.
Safety. WMFO Medford.
Thank you, Digital George and Digital Henry. For the second half of the show this morning, as I indicated, we're going to have a double Western, double feature Western. I'm going to go with... It's kind of sad because there's only one episode left of the Six Shooter that I have not played on the Grand Hour. So it's kind of winding down. This is episode 37 of my favorite all-time radio drama, The Six Shooter, starring James Stewart. This one's titled The New Sheriff. Had an original air date of the 15th of June, 1954. Six Shooter just ran for one season. It was a sustained show, meaning it didn't have any commercial sponsorship. For that matter, I don't believe Frontier Gentlemen was either. But without keeping on rambling here, I'll go ahead and play The New Sheriff. Again, this is Arthur, 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org.
You'll hear James Stewart as the Six Shooter. But first, Friday evening on NBC, hear the Dinah Shore Show and Songs with Sinatra. The laughter starts tomorrow with the Bob Hope Show and continues with that wonderful Phil Harris Alice Faye Show. But that's not all. You'll also hear Can You Top This and Fibber McGee and Molly. It's a great Friday night lineup of programs, all of them heard only on NBC. James Stewart as the Six Shooter. The man in the saddle is angular and long-legged. His skin is sun-dyed brown. The gun in his holster is gray steel and rainbow mother of pearl, its handle unmarked. People call them both the Six Shooter. The NBC Radio Network presents James Stewart as the Six Shooter, a transcribed series of radio dramas based on the life of Britt Ponsett, the Texas plainsman who wandered through the Western territories, leaving behind a trail of still-remembered legends.
first, I didn't know what I was getting into. The town of Virtue City had never looked like this before. Banner over the main street, posters stuck in the store windows, bunting draped across most of the buildings. It was the wrong time of the year for the county fair. I pulled up the Mansion Hotel and headed into the lobby.
Yes, sir?
I'd like a room for the night.
Well, I guess we can fix you up, mister, if you'll just sign the book.
Sure. Oh, by golly, I'm
never
sorry.
Mind, never mind. I'll blot it up. You just stand back out of the way. I put a new point in that pen this morning, but I guess some people, well...
I sure am sorry about it.
Yeah. Well, that'll be 50 cents in advance, Mr. Ponsett?
That's right. Here you go.
You're really Brit Ponsett?
Well, if he ain't, he's sure been fooling a lot of folks for quite a spell. How are you, Brit?
Well, Doc Cross. Where'd you come from?
I've been sitting there behind that uranium plant. I thought I recognized you when you come in.
Oh, I'll be darned.
Here's your key, Mr. Ponsett, number 12.
Oh, thanks.
About that ink blot, I know it wasn't your fault. They just don't make pen points the way they used to. Inferior workmanship.
Sure.
You in a hurry to go upstairs, Brit?
No, not especially.
Well, come on over to the window and sit for a spell. We can sort of keep our eye on the street and see what's going on.
All right, Doc.
Well, you been up to, Brit?
Oh, same as usual. I was riding herd over to Smoke Falls for the last 6-7 weeks. Probably go back there in the spring.
Uh-huh. Here, just let me get my instrument bag out of the way. Yeah, there's a place for you.
You treating somebody in the hotel?
No, not exactly. I sort of make my headquarters here in the hotel nowadays.
Well, what happened to your regular office?
Oh, I still got it. But, hotel's handier. What with all this fighting and shooting going on so much of the time?
Shooting?
You ain't heard the news, huh, Brit?
No, guess I haven't.
Well, you see, Gus Cotton moved into Virtue City a couple of months ago.
Gus Cotton?
You know who Gus is, Brit. That gunfighter used to be part of the McGinnis gang over at Williford.
Oh, sure, yeah. I've heard of him.
Well, it seems Gus and Tracer McGinnis had sort of a falling out. Gus decided it'd be healthier for him and his kid brother Roy to change residence, so they come over here. And by now, they've just about taken over the whole town.
Oh, I just can't believe that Sheriff Davenport would let a thing like that happen, Doc.
George Davenport was killed last August, Brit.
He was killed? No.
I reckon it was an accident. At least that's what the inquest said.
Uh-huh. Well, who's taking his place?
Well, there ain't been nobody so far. New sheriff will be elected tomorrow, along with the mayor and the usual town officers.
Oh, I see. So that's why the place all fixed up. Election day. Yeah. I was kind of wondering about that.
Yeah, it's been a real hot campaign, too. Sheriff part of it, that is. I ain't had so much medical business since the Apaches was moved on to the reservation.
Yeah, well, who's running?
Ernie Needle. He's one of the candidates. You remember Ernie Brett, the blacksmith.
Oh, sure. And that's a good man, too. He'd make a good sheriff, I imagine.
Yeah, if he wins. Roy Cotton's running against him. Gus's brother.
Oh, I see.
Of course, in a fair election, Ernie'd win hands down, but Gus Cotton's doing his best to see that it won't be fair.
He is, huh?
Yeah. Half the voters in town have been bought off. The ones who won't be bought, well, they've been threatened. Why, if anybody even... Brit, maybe you can give us a hand.
I'm
chairman of the group that's backing Ernie Needle. The Citizens Committee to Keep Virtue in Virtue City. That's what we call ourselves.
I see.
Now, Brit, if you could join up with us...
Now, hold on, Doc. I'm not a voter in this town. I'm not even a resident.
I know. But you've got influence. Lots of influence. And if you... You have lots of influence, Brit. And look, if you was to come to our rally at the schoolhouse tonight and sort of sit up there on the platform next to Ernie Needle, well, that might win him some of Roy Cotton's votes.
Now, I'm sorry, Doc. Now, this just isn't any of my business. Now, you know that as well as I do.
Now, Brit...
No, so long, Doc. Well, I went upstairs to my room. Number 12 was on the north side facing Ernie Needle's blacksmith shop. And it looks like Ernie had closed up for the day. He's probably out politicking somewhere. The room seemed kind of stuffy, so I opened up the window. It sure was warm. Sounded like some more business was had in Doc's way. I leaned out, but I couldn't see anything. The shooting must have been around in front. Oh, well. Yeah, come on in.
Howdy.
Howdy.
You're Brett Ponce.
That's right.
I'm Roy Cotton.
Uh-huh.
Understand, you were having a little chat with Doc Cross just now.
Uh-huh.
Doc a friend of yours?
Yeah, I guess you could say so, Roy.
Well, you know, it's funny, ain't it, how friends sometimes get a man into trouble?
Oh, that's so?
Yeah. You plan to stay around town for long, Ponce?
I hadn't made up my mind yet. Why?
I was just wondering if you were going to be here for the election tomorrow. You heard about the election.
I heard about it.
Well, I wasn't anxious to run for sheriff, you understand, but old folks seemed to think it was my duty, so I had to oblige them.
Well, I wouldn't worry about it, Roy. You might not be elected.
I'll be elected.
What, you got the votes counted already, huh?
I'll be elected. If there ain't no outside interference.
I see.
So maybe it'd be best if you just moseyed on out without sticking around for the vote.
Well, the doc mentioned something about a rally tonight, asked me to attend.
You're not going to attend to no rally, Ponce.
That's exactly what I told the doc.
You turned him down?
That's right.
Well, I guess I needn't bother you.
But now that you mention it, Cotton, I'm sort of reconsidering my decision.
What do you mean?
Well, you're barging in here and ordering me around might make me sort of consider changing my mind.
Oh, now you listen here, Ponsett. You ain't going to that rally tonight. You ain't even going to be in Virtue City after sundown.
I'm not, huh?
Well, if you are, you're just asking for me and Gus to do something about it.
Maybe I am, Cotton. Maybe I am.
Hmm? Okay, Ponce. You had your warning.
You're right.
Yeah?
I'm not leaving town, so if you want to do something about it, this is as good a time as any other.
Huh?
That gun you're wearing's loaded, isn't it?
Hold on. Well, sure, but...
Well, then why don't you go ahead and draw?
Well, you ain't got your six-shooter.
It's right here on the dresser.
All right. Well, I'd be taking advantage.
It might not work out that way. Well?
Well, I don't want to shoot up no hotel room, Ponce.
The rent's paid in advance. All right, Cotton.
Now, look here, Ponce. My coming up here to see you, well, it was my brother's idea. Gus thought, Now, what I mean is, he said that you was to have till sundown to get out of town, and he wouldn't like it if I was to jump the gun.
Well, I guess nobody exactly welcomes the idea of being told what he can do and what he can't do. And I suppose when it comes right down to it, I'm as stubborn as the next man. So, instead of leaving town, I had supper in the hotel dining room. And afterwards, well, I sort of moseyed over in the direction of the schoolhouse. There were only three or four horses out in front, a couple of buggies. Didn't look like the Citizens Committee to Keep Virtue in Virtue City had drawn much of a crowd. Well, I hadn't really planned on attending the rally. I was going to walk right by and head back to the hotel. But just as I started to move past the school, I spotted Roy Cotton waiting behind a big elm tree across the street. There was another fellow with him, bigger, older. Stood to reason he was Roy's brother, Gus. And it stood to reason that if I left without going inside, they'd figure they'd bluff me into keeping away. So, the meeting was in the combination 4th, 5th, sixth grade classroom, and Doc Cross was introducing the various candidates when I opened the door.
And as candidate for mayor, our good friend Cecil Potter.
Oh, yeah!
You all know Boak Spitzer, who's running for coroner. And last but far from least, the man who will be responsible for maintaining law and order, Ernie Needle, candidate for sheriff. Now, folks, I guess that's about all, so let's just... Wait a minute. Looks like we got us a visitor. Hey, sirree, step right up here, Britt. Step right up here.
Now, wait a minute, Doc. I didn't mean to interrupt your meeting here. I was just strolling by.
You ain't interrupting, Britt. You're a godsend. Folks, listen to me now. Now, quiet down. Quiet down, will you? Now, listen. Mr. Ponsett's arrival here puts a whole new complexion on things.
What? Well, I sure don't see how.
I know there ain't very many of us here tonight. And from the size of this meeting, it looks like we're fighting a hopeless battle. But we ain't. Not now. Not anymore. There's enough of us here to spread the word. We gotta see to it that by the time the polls open tomorrow, every Boonton citizen in Virtue City knows that the six shooters on our side.
Now, whoa, Doc. Now, hold on here.
Amos, you take the folks who live west of Cedar Street. Al, you take the section over by the creek. I'll cover the area along Clinton Avenue. And another thing, you tell everybody that Britt will be right there at the polls to see that the voting's done on the up and up.
Now, Doc. Now, you listen to me, Doc. Now, see here, Doc.
Now, you just see here, Doc.
Was there something you wanted to say, Britt?
Well, Doc, you know doggone well there's something I want to say. I'm not going to have folks running all over town claiming that I'm interfering in this election. Now, you just go and call them off, Doc, and you just stop them before it's too late.
Well, I'm afraid it's too late now, Britt. It looks to me like they're on their way.
Hmm?
And I better get started myself. I'm going to make it over to my section before everybody's asleep.
Okay, Doc, okay. You just go right ahead, but you're going to be pretty foolish looking in the morning.
What do you mean, Britt?
I mean that I'm not taking part in your election tomorrow, no matter what you tell people.
You won't do your duty, huh?
My duty is to mind my own business.
Britt, the law says there's supposed to be one man at the polls who's unbiased, who's neutral, so to speak.
What?
Well, of course, your sympathies may sort of lie with Ernie Needle and our committee, but technically, you're nonpartisan. Seeing as how you can't even vote yourself, I mean.
How's that?
Now, look, Britt. All that I'm trying to do is to see that this election's carried off strictly according to the law. The law says we got to have us a nonpartisan president at the polls. Well, I'm not even certain that the election would be legal if you wasn't ashore.
Well, I wouldn't want to stand in the way of the election being... if you're certain that... if it's really necessary. But honestly, Doc, I just can't believe that...
Well, it's up to you, Britt. Entirely up to you. Well, so long.
Now, Doc... Wait a minute.
Set up in the hotel lobby, Britt. Polls open at 7 a.m. Just... Let your conscience be your guide, Britt. Let your conscience be your guide. Night.
Night.
We'll return to James Stewart as the six shooter in just a moment. Meantime, I'd like to pass on a word of thanks for the many gratifying letters we receive each week from you, our audience. And this word of thanks comes not only from Jimmy Stewart, but from our director, Jack Johnstone, our writer, Frank Burt, our skilled technicians, in fact, all of us who are involved in the production of the program. We appreciate your letters far more than you may think, even though we may not be able to answer all of them. That is why we take this way of saying thank you.
Well, I just couldn't seem to get to sleep that night, and along about 5 a.m., I gave up trying. And it was just as well it did, because that was when Doc Cross showed up to take me down to breakfast. He kept saying that he wasn't trying to influence me one way or the other about being an election official, but as soon as we finished eating, he sure steered me straight toward that voting booth in the lobby. And the next thing I knew, somebody handed me a sheet of paper with a list of names on it, and people started filing up to get their ballots, and, well, the voting went off real smooth. There was just one shooting, and that turned out to be just a flesh wound. And when it finally came time to shut down the polls, just about everybody who was eligible had cast a ballot. There'd been a real good turnout, too. I didn't stick around for the counting. I figured I'd done my share, so I had some supper, and I went upstairs to the room. Oh, I sure was tired. Oh, not having any sleep the night before and having to sit around indoors all day. Well, I took my boots off. And I sort of stretched out flat on the bed for a couple minutes. I didn't intend to doze off. I was just trying to build up enough strength to go on with my undressing, but I don't know. Sam Hill, is it? Oh, yeah. Oh, is that you, Doc? Come in. Oh, what can I do for you?
We just finished counting the votes, Jeff Perkins and me.
Evening, Mr. Ponsett.
Oh, howdy, Jeff. Well, how'd the election turn out?
It's kind of hard to say, Britt.
Well, now, come on, Doc. Did Ernie win, or didn't he?
Well, no, Britt. No, he didn't win.
Oh.
But it could have been worse. It could have been lots worse.
I see. It was close, huh?
Oh, I wouldn't exactly call it close, Mr. Ponson.
Uh-huh. Well, suppose you just give me the figures, huh, Doc?
Well, in the race for sheriff, we figured that was the most important contest.
Yeah?
Ernie Needle got 7 votes.
7 votes, huh? Is that all?
Yeah, that was his total. We made certain.
And Roy Coffin, he got 33.
Well, I'm sorry, Doc, but I guess if the people want Roy for their sheriff, they're entitled to have him.
Yes. I'd say folks are entitled to whoever they want.
Well, I have to admit, I'm kind of surprised, though. I thought Ernie'd do better than that. By the way, folks were voting. I just thought that he... Now, just hold on a minute here, Doc. There's something funny here.
Huh?
Oh, now, you said Ernie got 7 and Roy Coffin 33.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, that's 33 and 7. That only makes 40 votes. Why, there must have been twice that many votes cast.
101, you know.
101. Well, that means there are about 60 ballots you haven't accounted for.
61, to be exact, Britt.
Yeah?
That's how many you got.
That's how many I got. That's how many who got?
Bridge, it gives me great pleasure to announce that you've just been elected sheriff of Virtue City by a landslide. Congratulations.
Now, hold on here, Doc. What do you
Mr.
mean?
Mr. Ponsett, it's the greatest write-in campaign in the history of this here town.
Yes, sir, Bridge.
I can't believe this couldn't be true. It's just plain foolishness.
The people have spoken.
Doc Cross, if you had something to do with
this... It was a spontaneous movement. Purely spontaneous.
Well, whatever it is, you know doggone well I won't take the job of sheriff. I don't even live here.
We just checked the Virtue City Incorporation papers. It must have been an oversight, but they don't say a word about town officials having to be residents.
Well, if you've got the idea I'm accepting this office, you're just mistaken. Even if this election is legal,
it was legal, all right. It was legal. And as of right now, you are the legally elected sheriff.
Uh-huh. All right. Then I resign.
Yeah, I sort of thought you might feel that way, so I did a little more checking. And according to the town laws, you've got to submit your resignation in writing to the mayor, and he's got to approve it. But we don't have a new mayor yet. Not until you get sworn in.
Now, hold on a minute, Doc. It was the office of sheriff that I got elected to, remember? You told
me. That's right, Mr. Ponsett. It seems the voters kind of got in the habit of writing in your name and, well...
You don't mean they elect me mayor, too?
You had a 2-to-1 majority.
You don't mean... What?
Yep.
You didn't do so good for coroner, though. Volk's Spitzer beat you out by 4 votes.
But don't feel too bad about it, Britt. Volk's a real popular man.
Well, I just don't know what to say. Well, this is the most outlandish thing I've ever heard of.
It is mighty unusual. I agree with you there.
Unusual? It's ridiculous. Well, I can tell you I've got no more intention of being mayor than I have of being sheriff.
I don't blame you, Britt. Britt, I don't blame you. About the mayor part, that is. As a matter of fact, you couldn't hold both jobs if you wanted to. There's a town ordinance against it.
I don't care if the... What'd you say?
Yes, sir. One man can't hold both jobs.
Well, that's something.
But like I said, your resigning the sheriff's position is kind of complicated, you see. Not only have we got the problem of who's going to accept the resignation...
Well, I'm the mayor. I'll accept it myself.
Well, even so, according to our statutes, when the sheriff resigns or retires, the job goes to the man who got the second highest number of votes.
Oh, you mean Roy Coffin would take over my place?
That's the gist of it, Mr. Ponsett.
Uh-huh.
So you see the spot you'd be putting us in, Britt.
Besides, Mr. Ponsett, the people elected you, and they're entitled to have you. You said so yourself.
When I said that, I didn't have any idea that this... Oh, now, look here. There's got to be some way out of this situation. Ernie Needle's the man this town needs for sheriff, and he ought to have the job. Isn't that what you wanted?
Well, maybe so, but... Well, I just don't see how we can work it out so he gets it. It's getting late. I guess you'll need your sleep. Probably have a big day tomorrow, what with all the swearing-in ceremony.
Now, don't run off, Doc. Now, this isn't settled yet.
Oh, like as not, things will settle themselves. They usually do.
Good night, Mr. Ponsett.
Good night. Oh, by the way, Britt, I'll just leave your star here on the dresser. There's a little rust on the point where the platen's worn off, but good polish and they'll take care of it.
Well, that was the second night in a row I didn't get much sleep. First thing in the morning, as soon as I figured it was time for the town hall to open, I headed down there and I did a little hunting through the legal code myself. And it was all true what Doc Cross had told me. If I gave up the job of sheriff, Roy Cotton would be next in line for it. About 9 o'clock, a delegation headed by Doc Cross came in to make the preparations for the swearing-in ceremony. And I told them that the ceremonies just have to be postponed until I had a talk with the Cotton brothers. They were living in the old Peterson place on Flower Street.
You've got your nerve coming around here, Ponsett. If you figure on making a name for yourself as sheriff by arresting us, you better do some more figuring.
Arresting you? You mean you boys have done something illegal?
No, he never said that.
Well, putting you under arrest was the farthest thing from my mind. Of course, if you think I should.
And just what is it you do want, Ponsett?
Well, the fact of the matter is, it's my understanding that Roy here would inherit the sheriff's job if anything happened that I wasn't able to go on.
That's right, Ponsett.
And like as not, something will happen, too.
Uh-huh. Well, I was just thinking that under those circumstances, it might be a good idea for Roy to get all the experience he can while I'm around to show him the ropes.
You want me to work with you?
Well, I don't see why not. Come to think of it, I could use you both as deputies.
Deputies?
Yeah, that'll save me getting the whole big posse together. I think the three of us ought to be able to handle the McGinnis gang.
McGinnis?
Tracer McGinnis. You heard about him, haven't you? Oh, that's right. You all used to be sort of friendly, didn't you? Before you had that falling out with him, that is.
Gosh.
You don't mean Tracer McGinnis is heading this way.
Oh, that's probably just another false rumor, but it's probably not a word of truth to us.
Yeah, but why'd he be coming in here, Gus? Unless he's after us again.
Yeah.
Well, now, if you fellows would just hold up your hands, I'll give you the oath.
No, wait a minute, Ponsett. Maybe it'd be better if you was to take out More of a posse.
Oh, now, now, Gus. I, like as not, Fraser won't be bringing his whole gang. Maybe only 10 or 12 of them. All right, now, boys, you hold up your hands.
I ain't going to mix it up with Fraser McGinnis, Ponson. I had enough of him already.
But, Roy...
The kid's right for once.
Well, I'm afraid you fellas don't quite understand. Now, according to the ordinance passed 2 years ago come November... If any man refuses to take part in a duly constituted posse, he forfeits all right to hold office in the town of Virtue City from that time on. That'd mean that you couldn't be sheriff, Roy.
Gossie.
I don't figure that's going to make much difference, Ponsett. You see, we don't aim to stay around Virtue City anyhow.
Yeah, that's right. We were sort of... planning to leave town today, weren't we, Gus?
Yeah, we were just doing our packing when you come in.
Well, maybe we ought not to wait to pack, Gus. Them McGinnis boys ride fast when they're on the move.
They sure do. Come on.
Oh, I wouldn't hurry myself too much, boys. If you ask me, I think you'll have plenty of time to finish packing before they get here. Plenty of time. As things worked out, they needn't have heard it all. As far as I know, Tracer McGinnis never did show up in Virtue City. Of course, Ernie Needle became sheriff that very same day, right after I resigned. And I guess he hasn't had too much trouble keeping folks in line. You see, the Cotton Brothers haven't been heard of since they beat it out of town. It just goes to show you, a person really shouldn't believe in rumors. It's funny... funny the way they get started, isn't it?
The Six Shooter is a transcribed NBC Radio Network production in association with Review Productions. It is written by Frank Burt and is based on a character created by him. Mr. Stewart may currently be seen in the Universal International picture The Glenn Miller Story. Others in the cast were Carlton Young, Dal McKinnon, Paul Richards, Frank Gerstel, and Junius Matthews. Special music for this program was by Basil Adlam, and the entire production is under the direction of Jack Johnstone. All characters and incidents were fictitious, and any resemblance to actual characters or incidents is purely coincidental. This is John Wall speaking. Tonight, hear an address by President Eisenhower on the NBC Radio Network.
This level right with this Marysville High School band's treatment of Along the Picket Fence. Cage, thanks, John Wall. That was episode 36 of The Six Shooter, The New Sheriff. Brett always seems to get himself into some mix-ups. The original air date of the 15th of June, 1954. I started the show off today with A Frontier Gentleman, episode 20, The Well, with an original air date of the 15th of June, 1958. Actually, both of these, one was June 16th, I believe The Six Shooter was June 16th, 1954. Frontier Gentleman was the 15th of June, 1958. So I'm almost 4 entire years apart. That, you can hear that, Frontier Gentleman. If you go to www.mfo.org, click on schedule, find Arthur at the Grand Hour between 5 and 6 a.m. Click archive, it'll lead you through some prompts, and you can hear that. And thanks. Thanks for listening again. I don't know what I'm going to do next week. Perhaps another. I won't do a double western. I don't know. We'll see how it goes. Combing, mining, through radio dramas over the weekend. Thanks.